Good evening, everyone. It's a pleasure to be with you. I appreciate so very much the opportunity to speak to this group of people, and thank you for taking time out of your evening to come and to spend a few moments thinking about the things of God. Tonight we want to continue our series on what the Bible says about marriage and sexuality by looking at what the Bible has to say about the equality of the sexes. You know, we live in a day and time when if you just mention the biblical teaching about the roles of men and women, you're going to get opposition. You're going to have people that will react in an extremely negative way. There have been several times in my life as a gospel preacher, and many of those who are here probably can share the same experience, where there's been someone that I've been working with trying to convert to Jesus Christ, I think especially of one particular woman several years ago that was so interested in what our church was doing. We studied the Bible. She was excited about that. She was anxious to come to our services. She came to our services on a Sunday. She came back the next week. She and I were studying. Everything was wonderful. It looked like she was extremely close to being baptized into Jesus Christ. Until finally she asked me, how come every time I come, there's not a woman preacher? I have yet to see one. And I talked with her a little bit about what the Bible has to say about that and about male leadership, and I never saw her again. We live in a world where the biblical teaching is something that is not politically correct. In the eyes of our world, it's not something that a lot of people want to hear. But let me say this. A lot of times people have some misunderstandings about what the Bible actually says and what it teaches. Their grasp of the fullness of what the Bible has to say in regard to the sexes is insufficient, and therefore there are some misconceptions that people have. They think the Bible is saying something. They think that we are somehow saying something that really the Bible is not saying. Now, there are some things the Bible does teach that they do not find palatable. But sometimes what makes things worse in their minds is the misinformation that they have. So it is extremely important for us tonight to look at the truth of the biblical teaching in regard to the equality of the sexes. And let me just start out tonight by showing you some quotations from those who have been leaders in the feminist movement, which had such an impact in our society in the late 60s and 70s and 80s, the effects of which we still see today. Marlene Dixon said on one occasion, the institution of marriage is the chief vehicle for the perpetuation of the oppression of women. A leaflet distributed at the New York feminist demonstration a few decades ago. We can't destroy the inequities between men and women until we destroy marriage. Radford Ruther said, feminist theology must create a new textual base, a new canon. Feminist theology cannot be done from the existing base of the Christian Bible. And then finally, Gloria Steinem once said, by the year 2000, we will, I hope, raise our children to believe in human potential, not God. We are living in a current world, a current society here in America that has very much been influenced by the feminist movement in its most radical and vocal extreme that has been extremely anti-God, as you can see from these excerpts, extremely anti-Bible, as you can see, extremely anti-marriage, and especially the biblical concept of marriage. And so it is extremely important for us to look at what the Bible is saying and what it's actually saying and the fullness of the biblical picture in regard to what God has established for the sexes. And so I'm going to start out tonight by noting some misconceptions that are very common among people in our society today. Very often people in our society will have this assumption that New Testament Christianity is oppressive to women. It's this idea that the Bible and what it's teaching is something that really puts women down, that it de-elevates women, that it's something therefore that degrades them. I want us to appreciate right up front that that kind of view is not a view that reflects historical knowledge. The fact of the matter is that New Testament Christianity has done more to elevate how women are viewed in this world than anything else in history. The fact of the matter is that the Bible is teaching, New Testament Christianity was teaching, something absolutely radical and novel, that in Jesus Christ, as Paul said in Galatians 3, there is neither bond nor free, there is neither Jew nor Gentile. He said there is neither male nor female. The idea that as far as God is concerned, men and women are equal in His eyes, of equal importance, and that Jesus died on the cross for women as well as men. It is an extremely amazing thing when you really appreciate the significance of that teaching, the iconoclasm of that teaching, as it made its entrance into that first century Greco-Roman world. Because what you really have New Testament Christianity saying is that here are female disciples of Jesus Christ, and they are disciples just like those male disciples, and are actually in those Christian assemblies being educated in the teaching of Jesus Christ alongside male disciples. Let me tell you what, generally speaking, in the Greco-Roman world, you would never have women educated along with men in the same kind of setting. And yet that's what you see with New Testament Christianity. New Testament Christianity was absolutely novel in all of that, in saying that women and their souls are absolutely important to God, and God wants them to understand this truth about Jesus Christ as much as He wants men to understand that. We need to understand that the New Testament is teaching that women are absolutely those for whom Christ died. And in fact, husbands, the New Testament gospel teaches, must understand that. It was Peter in 1 Peter chapter 3, and verse 7, who talks about how a husband who does not show honor to this wife of his and grant her honor as that weaker vessel, he's going to suffer the spiritual consequences of his prayers not being heard by God. That's absolutely astounding in the context of that Greco-Roman world. And I'll tell you something that's just as astounding is the teaching of the Apostle Paul in Ephesians chapter 5, that husbands, the attitude they're to have toward their wife, the wife who, yes, is to be in submission to them, but the attitude that husband is to have toward his wife is to love her as Christ loved the church and give himself up for her. Let me tell you what, Paul's teaching in Ephesians 5 about the wife being in submission to her husband, that wouldn't have seemed strange to the ears of those in the Greco-Roman world. That wouldn't have appeared novel to them in that patriarchal society. But the idea of a husband having to love his wife and give himself up for her, and she's the focus of his attention and his headship, that was absolutely novel in that society. That's what New Testament Christianity was doing. It was elevating women. And so we need to disabuse ourselves and disabuse our neighbors, if we can, of this kind of erroneous thought that somehow New Testament Christianity is oppressive to women. Nothing could be further from the truth. Let me talk with you about another misconception that people, though, have in our society. People sometimes think this is true. American society used to follow the biblical teaching of male and female roles. You ever heard people say that? I've heard brethren say that. I've heard a lot of brethren in the context of a conversation lamenting the fact that it's not the good old days, how things used to be. And our society has had all these negative shifts. And yeah, I believe our society has had a lot of negative shifts. But people talk about how, well, it used to be that the Bible was respected and that the biblical teaching about men and women, that that was respected in our society. Let me just say that we've got a revisionist history going on, if that's really what we think. We're sort of picking and choosing our historical facts. If we think that in American society, it always used to be that the biblical model of male and female roles was respected. Do you realize that it used to be extreme? And I mean, not just too many years ago either. It used to be extremely common for people to just think, well, you know, women, they're not as smart as men. Can you ladies, you young girls, do you realize that's what people used to think? That, well, women, they really aren't as intelligent as men. And that's the reason why in our society there was a time not too long ago when women didn't even have the right to vote. Because, well, you don't want the women voting because they're not really intelligent enough to grasp all the issues, understand all the things. And so you don't want the women voting. It used to be in our society that women would not have the same educational opportunities that they have now, right alongside the men. Able to study whatever in whatever the field is, in whatever the academic institution is, it used to be that that was something that was not allowed for women. That just like in a lot of those ancient patriarchal societies, it used to be in our country, that women were maybe able to have a certain level of education, but weren't expected to have the kind of level of education and the kind of educational opportunities that men had. That's how it used to be in our society. It also used to be viewed commonly in our society in regard to male and female roles that what male headship meant was that if a wife was not really being in subjection to her husband the way that she should be, well, every husband just had the right, in fact, maybe even sort of the obligation to just physically, if that's what it called for, physically set that little woman straight. And there's a lot of men in our society who have grown up having the idea that, well, you just can actually physically beat your wife and bring her into submission. And our society in the past said that's exactly right. You ever watch any of the old TV shows of the late 50s and 60s? Or the motion pictures, old motion pictures, during that general period of time. Saw a John Wayne picture the other day. Just flipping through the channels. Saw a John Wayne picture. I forget the title of it right now. John, maybe it was McClintock, or I don't remember. But John Wayne and Maureen O'Hara. And the whole subplot of the whole picture was the trouble that the husband and wife were having, and she was just not being the kind of wife that she should be. And the climax of the entire movie, the comedic climax of the entire movie, where he just goes through the town, all the townspeople are behind him, and he's going to get his wife, and he finally catches her, and he puts her over his knee, and he gets, someone gives him something to spank her with, and he just spanks her out in front of everybody, and everybody, that's just great, that's wonderful, and that's the comedic point of the movie. And I'm watching that, and I'm thinking, my goodness, that's not only so politically correct, so politically incorrect now, but that's really what people thought was acceptable and proper. And here we have people that say, well, it used to be in our society that our society followed the biblical model of male and female roles. Let me tell you what, that's not what the Bible's talking about. And I look at that kind of thing and I'm embarrassed by that kind of thing. Not suggesting the Bible doesn't make a distinction in those roles. We'll talk about that in just a moment. But we need to understand that our society has really never been a society that absolutely and completely was right there in line with everything that the Bible had to say about male and female roles. In fact, no society is ever exactly in line with what the Bible has to teach about those principles, or I dare say, about any principle. The fact of the matter is, the best of societies are still nations of the world that are ruled by Satan, that are not loyal to God. And yes, in every society, there are some things that you can point to as that's something in our society that does coincide with what the Bible is teaching and helps to promote what the Bible teaches. We talked about that on Sunday. In every society, there are some things like that that you can point to, but I will guarantee you there are also plenty of other things you can point to that do not reflect the true biblical teaching in some other area. That's just the way it always is, because our societies are part of the world that is ruled over by Satan. And so what we need to understand is that America in the past may have supported some aspects of biblical teaching better than it does now, but also America in the past was not supporting some aspects of biblical teaching that maybe now our society promotes a little bit better, just in some other area. So again, we need to disabuse ourselves of some kind of idealistic, revisionist history view of our nation, that somehow our nation always used to support the biblical teaching about male and female roles. What we've got to do is go back to the Bible and look at what the Bible actually teaches. And I want to say to you, the Bible teaches that men and women are equal in their nature and in their importance to God. That's absolutely what the Bible is teaching. Genesis chapter 1 and verse 27 talks about God in the very beginning, making male and female and making them both in the image of God. The Apostle Paul talks about this and talks about the importance of women in 1 Corinthians chapter 11, verses 11 and 12. Let me point out those verses to you. He says, "However, in the Lord neither is woman independent of man, nor is man independent of woman. For as the woman originates from the man, so also the man has his birth through the woman, and all things originate from God." In fact, in this very context, and we'll look at the rest of the context in just a moment, Paul's talking about the difference in those male-female roles, but he wants to make it very, very clear that that distinction in those roles does not somehow mean that men are more important than women, or that men can look at women as somehow not as important to them, because the fact of the matter is that every man is brought into this world by the process of a woman. And originally, the woman was created from the side of the man. And so both sexes are interdependent, Paul is saying. And it's always been that way. They are absolutely equal in their importance. They're equal in their fundamental nature. And that's the reason why in Galatians 3, verses 27 and 28, the Apostle Paul emphasized that in Jesus Christ, as we said a moment ago, there is neither male nor female, because the soul of a woman is just as important to God as the soul of a man. So we need to understand that biblical teaching about the equality of the sexes in their fundamental nature, in their absolute essence, and in their importance to God. We need to understand that very, very carefully and emphasize that point. This is one of those points that so often is not emphasized to our friends and neighbors in the world. We also need to understand the Bible teaches that men and women are different. And you know, this is one of those obvious truths that sometimes, you know, isn't quite so obvious to people. I remember back in the late 80s, and some of you folks are old enough to remember this, where Vice President Dan Quayle made the mistake of actually suggesting that there was a difference between men and women. And at that time, oh no, we can't say that. And he's just lambasted for how dare anyone suggest there's any difference at all between men and women. That's a terrible, terrible thing. And yet now, you know, what's kind of happened is that psychologists have begun to look at this, and the academicians have begun to look at this, and anthropologists have begun to look at this, and we've kind of figured out something. Because of our scientific study and research and our high acumen, we've been able to determine that men and women are different. Well, isn't that remarkable? I kind of noticed that a long time ago in my life. I began to kind of get a sense of that. And the fact of the matter is that when you look at what the Bible has to say, the Bible recognizes and extols the difference as being something which is God ordained for a reason. Again, in Genesis 1:27, and then as you go on in the chapter 2, verses 18 through 23, where you read about God creating men and women in His image, and then in chapter 2, He elaborates and gives a fuller account, Moses does, about all of this and how the woman was formed to be that helper suitable for the man. As we talked about on Sunday, that counterpart that could complete that man and make him a whole and complete person. In fact, the whole idea in Genesis 2 where God said, it's not good for a man to be alone, that idea is not talking about the fact that, well, Adam was somehow lonely emotionally. I don't know, maybe he was moping around the garden and going, woe is me, you know, I just don't have anybody. You know, maybe he was, but that's not what Genesis 2:18 is talking about. When God said it's not good for the man to be alone, He's not talking about the emotion of loneliness. He's talking about the state of aloneness. It's like if you have two parts that come together to form a whole, and you take one part away. Well, what is this now? It's alone. It's separate. It's incomplete. It needs a counterpart to complement it and to complete it so that together they can be a whole. That's what Genesis 2 is talking about God doing when He said it's not good for the man to be alone. He's incomplete. At that point, God was thinking, my creative work is not yet done. If I stopped here, then He's not a whole and complete person. He needs that counterpart to make him a whole and complete person. And that's the concept there, that he didn't need someone exactly like himself. He needed someone who would complement him. Someone who was enough like him to be a suitable match for him. And by the way, Adam came to see that as God had him name the animals in the garden. Have you ever thought about that? The point of that in the context is not that God had Adam name the animals so that he could go, well, okay, I'm going to call you Fido and going to call you Spot or all that. That's not what he's talking about. It's talking about naming, kind of like, you know, those Latin names that in science biology class would distinguish the various animals and the taxonomy of animals and all of that. It's the idea that God was calling upon Adam to look at these different animals and to recognize that none of them were really corresponding to him. None of them really were in the same category as him. And that's why when God finally took that rib from Adam's side and fashioned that rib into a woman and brought her to the man, Adam looked at her, he saw her nature, he saw that she was of man, and he named her woman, the Hebrew isha, from the word man, ish, and he called her isha because she was from ish. She was from man, so he called her woman. She was like him, she corresponded to him. Not identical. Because he didn't need someone who was completely identical to him. He needed someone who would complement him. And so what we need to understand is the Bible is teaching that men and women are different. They are enough alike to where they really match each other. But they're still different. Have you ever read that book, heard that book, Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus? That's another one of those books. The title is the best thing about the book. I mean, that just says it all. good book, but I'm just saying the title is just says it all, because yes, men and women are different, and many a husband and many a wife have thought we are from different planets. And let me tell you what, men and women, they are from different planets. But may I remind you that Mars and Venus are still in the same solar system. Men and women are not completely different, but they are different in a complementary way. And that's why modern psychologists have now begun to recognize this. And as we all look at this, I think that's pretty obvious that we could all agree. Men tend to be more outward in their focus, and women tend, just as a general tendency, to be a little more inward in their focus. Men oftentimes are much more analytical, not suggesting that they're any smarter than women, but, men tend to want to analyze some problem, and women kind of approach it from more of an intuitive kind of way. And that's what frustrates us at times, you know. That's what causes the problem in marriage sometimes when the husband comes home from work and the wife just begins to tell him about all these problems, you know, and all this, you know. And so the husband, his analytical brain starts clicking, you know, and, you know, he starts saying, well, all right, honey, here's what we need to do about all that. And she finally gets so tired. Would you just be quiet and listen to me? She doesn't want you to solve the problem and figure it out. She wants you just to listen to her. And it takes a while for us men to kind of realize that, because we're kind of more in the analytical vein. And, you know, women just kind of intuit things. And then, you know, they'll make some statement about somebody or some, you know, well, I think she's sad or whatever. I mean, well, why do you say that? Was she crying? Well, no. Was she frowning? Well, no. Well, how do you know that? Well, I just think she is. And then later you find out, well, she was dead right. And that's just kind of the way women are. They're a little more that way than the men are. Men tend to be a little more physical, and women tend to be a little more emotional. Just as a general statement about each sex, and men as a sex, they tend to be a little more aggressive, and women tend to be a little more nurturing. I think that's probably why you got more males in prison than you have women in prison, you know. And men tend to be a little more goal-oriented. And women tend to be a little more concerned about relationships than men are. And those are just differences that are there. Recently, I was riding my bike. There's some bike trails in the subdivision where my wife and I live. A few miles of those trails. So I'm riding my bike on those trails. And I turned a corner, and here in this open area, there was a little boy about, I don't know, maybe 8 to 10 years of age. And he had taken a sharp turn on his bike, and he wiped out, and he's just, you could tell, he skinned his knee, and, you know, and so I'm, you know, get off my bike and start going to him, just make sure the kid is okay. And I could just see that little boy, and his lip, he's trying so hard to fight back tears, and he wants to just burst out and cry. And on the opposite side, there was a woman who was riding her bike. I didn't know her. She didn't know me. Neither one of us knew the boy. But she saw the boy crash too. And so both of us come up to him at the same time. As I'm walking toward him, and I can see his little lip quivering, he's trying so hard not to cry. And so here's what I began to say to him as I'm walking up toward him. Hey, man, you okay? All right. Shake it off, buddy. It's going to be good. You're okay. And she comes up on the side and she, oh, little John, are you okay? Oh, what's your name? Are you okay? And I just sat there and I said, okay, this illustrates everything. I mean, I'm trying to help this kid deal with this problem by, you know, all right, let's be tough. Let's not make too big out of this. So your wife, that's going to be okay. Rub some dirt on it and let's go. And she's, oh, little buddy, let me help you. Where do you live? I'll take you home, you know. And it was all that. But let me tell you what. We need both of those kinds of people. We need that female perspective on all those things. We need that male perspective on all those things. And let me just say to you, as you look at this kind of a Venn diagram, you'll notice the overlap and all that. That's purposeful. Because I'm not suggesting, and no psychologist is suggesting, certainly the Bible's not suggesting, that men and women are completely different from one another, or that somehow men can never be nurturing, or that women can never be aggressive, or that men can never be emotional, and that women would never be physical or analytical. Not suggesting any of that. We're talking about some general tendencies, and these overlap. But the point is, we need both of that. Because if you didn't have both, you know, it'd be kind of a tough world to live in. Because there are times when you scrape your knee because you've fallen, sometimes you do need somebody just to kind of hold you a little bit and wipe the tears away. And sometimes, when you fall and scrape your knee, you do need to just get back up, rub some dirt on it, and go on. You need both of those perspectives to deal with the things in life that come up. And so we need to appreciate what the Bible is saying. But some people don't want to accept that. Feminist Sandra Bim said, "I advocate a vision of utopia." She says, a vision of utopia in which gender polarization, like androcentrism, has been so completely dismantled that, except in narrowly biological contexts like reproduction, the distinction between male and female no longer organizes either the culture or the psyche. In other words, this has been the thought of so many in our society that we want to just minimize any kind of differences. Oh yes, there's some obvious biological, obvious anatomical differences. So you kind of need those for reproduction. Okay, we get that. But we want to make that just as minor an aspect as possible so that really those sexes are completely the same. And our whole reason for doing that is this societal agenda to try to have an egalitarian society where there's no difference that is seen so that there can be no difference in roles. And that just doesn't work. It creates a agenda where you're trying to just fight against what is obviously the truth about men and women. They are different, and those differences are good. And the Bible says God created those differences, and there's a benefit there. John Piper said in his book, Recovering Biblical Manhood and Womanhood, "The tendency today is to stress the equality of men and women by minimizing the unique significance of our maleness and femaleness. But this depreciation of male and female personhood is a great loss. It is taking a tremendous toll on generations of young men and women who do not know what it means to be a man or a woman. Confusion over the meaning of sexual personhood today is epidemic. The consequence of this confusion is not a free and happy harmony among gender-free persons relating on the basis of abstract competencies. The consequence, rather, is more divorce, more homosexuality, more distress and suicide that come with the loss of God-given identity." And he's dead on right about that. God made us as men and women to complement one another because both sexes are absolutely needful. And so we need this. And men need to be able to learn a little bit from that female perspective and that emotional nurturing, intuitive kind of perspective. We need to have respect for that and the role that it plays. That man is an absolute fool who thinks he can make a decision without having the input from his wife so he can make an important decision about the family from the complete perspective of things. He's an absolute fool. I tell you what, a group of elders have learned the hard way when they're trying to build and design that church building, that if they don't get the perspective of those women about how things should be in that church building, whether you're talking about the size of the ladies' room or whether you're talking about the colors in the foyer and the pews, many an eldership has realized, well, we sure did make a big mistake because we never asked any women about this. And we've had some elders where I'm at who've kind of had to eat some crow because they just, well, we're just going to analytically go in and we're going to solve this problem. And then the women just, you got to be kidding me. And you know what? When you look at it from what they were pointing out, yeah, we should listen to them. And so we need both perspectives. And God knew that. And so we need to appreciate all of this. Now we also need to appreciate the Bible does teach that men and women have different roles. Absolutely, and I've alluded to this several times, the Bible does teach that men and women have different roles, and it is really based upon those differences that we already have seen that are God-given in their basic tendencies. It seems to me very clear that then that's why you have then these kinds of roles that are different. Yes, you see when you look at 1 Corinthians 11 verses 3 and then 8 through 9 that yes, men are to be the head of the woman. Yes, that's something that you see in the home that is reflected in that. And that's why the Apostle Paul says in Ephesians 5 verses 22 through 34 in his instructions to wives and then husbands, he talks about that distinction in role that men are in that position of leadership in the home. Yes, they are. And God in His wisdom deemed that to be the best kind of relationship. And the wife is to be in submission to her husband in that regard. You can never have anyone in a position of leadership if those who are supposed to follow won't follow. Never. A person can't lead if people won't follow. And so yes, what you see the Bible talking about is different roles of men and women in the home and male leadership. And yet what I want you to appreciate from what the Apostle Paul says, and then let me just emphasize it by reading these verses that I alluded to a few moments ago in the lesson. In Ephesians 5, beginning with verse 25. The Apostle Paul says, husbands, love your wives, just as Christ also loved the church and gave himself up for her, that he might sanctify her, having cleansed her by the washing of water with the word, that he might present to himself the church in all her glory, having no spot or wrinkle or any such thing, but that she should be holy and blameless. So husbands ought to love their own wives as their own bodies. He who loves his own wife loves himself. For no man ever hated his own flesh, but nourishes and cherishes it just as Christ does the church. Paul is emphasizing something absolutely novel in that day. That the way you should exercise your headship as a man is not in some selfish kind of patriarchal domineering way where my purpose is that she's there to serve my needs. I'm going to make sure she does. That's not what God is after. That's not what the Bible is teaching. And the fact that there are people in the name of Christianity who have applied the idea of male headship as this kind of selfish, just keep that little woman under my thumb, and they justify that kind of aberrant behavior by saying, oh, well, that's what the Bible's teaching for its roles. That's an absolute lie, and that's what allows people in this world more reason to just turn their back on what the Bible says. And it's our failure to apply the biblical teaching properly that so often gives people license in the world to have that kind of erroneous view of what male headship is supposed to be about. Paul says it's a completely selfless kind of love, just like Christ gave himself up for us. Jesus did not die on that cross because it did one thing for him. Well, he wasn't trying to benefit himself. He was trying to benefit his bride, the church, those people who would be his followers. And that's how every husband needs to view his role as a leader of his home. And wives need to understand, yes, they're in that submissive role. Yes, they're in that role that Paul talks about in Titus chapter 2, for example, verses 4 and following. They're in this role where he talks about older women needing to teach the younger women, verse 4, to love their husbands, to love their children, to be sensible, pure, workers at home, kind, being subject to their own husbands, that the word of God may not be dishonored. Women need to praise God for that being their role. There's an absolute necessity for that kind of role. And so when you look at what the Bible is teaching about male and female roles, yes, you do have that male who is the leader of his home and the wife who's to be in submission to him. And yes, I do think the Bible teaches then this overall role of a male is to be the provider for the home and the wife to be the homemaker and her domestic responsibilities. Even there, again, as I show it in the diagram, this Venn diagram, there's overlap there. Certainly, when you look at Proverbs 31, you certainly have a picture there of a wife who is in her domestic responsibility, helping to provide for that home in a monetary way. That's certainly fine and good, but the major provider for the home is the man. He's the ultimate one responsible for that. And she is that ultimate one who's responsible for the nurturing of those children. Not to suggest that fathers don't have a part in all that, but there's a special kind of focus that women need to see. And let me say this, we need to glorify God in these roles and honor these roles and praise God for giving us these roles. Because both are absolutely necessary. You can't have a successful arrangement in the home if you don't have both. And I don't believe, by the way, let me just say this, how is this all to work out in the actual, who writes the checks? And Bible doesn't teach anything on that. You can work that one out. And you can kind of work out, okay, who's going to pick up the kids because you got to go to soccer practice and all that, We need to talk about that and come to a decision about all that as to what's the best way to handle all of that. But the basic principles that the Bible is talking about in regard to leadership and submission, in regard to your overall focus being the provision for that home and being a homemaker, the overall principles the Bible teaches upon that, those are universal. And those don't change. Are there some effect that in application, depending on what society you're living in and as to how that's going to affect certain things? Yeah, I think so. But the overall principles that God is teaching, that God set up from the very beginning, these are things that always need to be respected. And so do we appreciate the fact that the Bible teaches men and women have these different roles, not just in the home, but is it really surprising then? Also within the church arrangement. 1 Timothy chapter 2. The Apostle Paul giving that instruction to Timothy so that he can teach that church at Ephesus these principles of God and how that household of God should behave. He talks here in 1 Timothy chapter 2 and verse 8 about the men in every place lifting up holy hands with wrath or without wrath and dissension. I think in the context, he's clearly talking about the male leadership and worship and leading those prayers. And yet he then goes on to talk about the women. He says in verse 9, likewise, I want women to adorn themselves with proper clothing, modestly and discreetly, not with braided hair and gold or pearls or costly garments, but rather by means of good works as befits women making a claim to godliness. For goodness sakes, make sure we understand what he's really talking about in that passage. He's talking in that passage about the fact, don't make the idea that you have is what makes me a woman who is attractive and my focus is my outward appearance, and so I adorn myself with all of these jewels and the expensive hair styles and the dresses and all this. He says, no, it's your character that needs to be your ultimate adornment. That's what people need to see. And that's what needs to then be what honors you. Not some physical thing, but let it be that inner person and your character. And he goes on to say, verse 11, let a woman quietly receive instruction with entire submissiveness. I do not allow a woman to teach or exercise authority over a man, but to remain quiet, for it was Adam who was first created and then Eve, and it was not Adam who was deceived, but the woman being quite deceived fell into transgression. And so he grounds these male-female roles, even in that church relationship, even where you've got a teaching arrangement, he grounds them in the idea of the male leadership in that regard. He grounds it in that creation principle, what God set up from the very beginning. And so that's not just some cultural thing that Paul was talking about. No, there are some cultural aspects to the application of all that, but the principle of the distinction of the roles and male leadership, that's something that goes back to the very beginning. That's how God set up this world order, male and female. And we need to appreciate the fact that, think about what I had said at the very beginning of this lesson. In that Greco-Roman world, imagine now you've got these Christian assemblies and you've got women disciples sitting alongside men disciples. Amazing. That Jesus Christ wants even women to learn the same information, have the same knowledge of Jesus Christ, that they might have that spiritual maturity just like a man in that society, so novel. And yet, can you see why he wants to emphasize this point? That doesn't mean that there's then just some tossing away of the male leadership role. But rather the women are to receive instruction from the men and not the other way around. Don't reverse that and have then a woman who is teaching, exercising authority over a man. That just reverses God's plan. And also, can you imagine the absurdity of here you have these roles of male leadership in the home and yet somehow in the church relationship? What, it's okay for that to suddenly be reversed? And just imagine how you'd have the problems there. And so Paul is emphasizing. He's emphasizing absolutely those women need to be taught and be disciples just like the men. But the men are the leaders and the women need to respect that. And again, that to not respect that would be to cast aspersions upon the wisdom of God and what He set up from the very beginning. And that's the point the Apostle Paul is making. And so what we need to see in all of this is that the Bible is teaching something that our society doesn't really understand accurately, even what the Bible's saying. Our society has a skewed perception of what the Bible is talking about when it talks about the sexes and the roles and what's involved in all of that. Let me tell you though, there are still some things the Bible does teach that we need to absolutely accurately teach, but absolutely apply in our lives. And we live in a society that very often is not going to be accepting of that. Even when we teach them the actual true picture, they still may not accept all of that. But let me tell you what we need to do about that. We need to keep teaching it. Keep teaching it with love. We need to make sure that we have women who do not apologize for what the Bible says about the female role, but who absolutely glorify God in their femininity, in their womanhood, and let their friends and neighbors know that they absolutely respect and appreciate being a woman in God's scheme of things. And we need men who are going to be the kind of leader that God calls upon us to be and not take that leadership position as an excuse for our kind of selfish behavior and selfish domination of a woman. When we do that, we dishonor God just as much as that woman dishonors God by rejecting her role as a woman. And so we need to teach on what the Bible is saying, the truth about what the Bible is saying, and we need to practice the truth about what the Bible is saying. the equality of the sexes in nature and importance, and differences in those sexes, differences in men and women that God created as something good, and differences in roles that, again, God established from the beginning as something good. And may God help us to let our lights shine in this world so we will help people see the glory of our God reflected in our marriages, reflected in our congregations. And may God help us to that end. If you're here tonight, you're not a Christian. We sure hope you'll become one. Because our God is so wise. And if you will turn your life over to Him, you'll never regret it. He knows what's best for us. He knows what's best for you. And so if you've never been baptized into Jesus Christ, we hope you'll do so tonight. If you've not been the kind of husband that you should have been, start tonight by getting on your knees and asking God's forgiveness and asking forgiveness of your wife, and you start being the right kind of husband. If you have not been the right kind of wife, you do the same thing and start being the right kind of wife. And if we can help you in that regard and pray for you, let that be known. Even now, as together we stand and sing this song of encouragement.
Hark the gentle voice of Jesus call tenderly upon your ear. Sweet His cry of love and pity calleth, turn and listen, stay and hear. Ye that labor and are heavy laden, lean upon your dear Lord's breast. Ye that labor and are heavy laden, come and I will give you rest. Take His yoke, for He is meek and lowly. Bear His burden, to Him turn. He who calleth is the Master holy. He will teach if you will learn. He that labor and are heavy laden, lean upon your dear Lord's breast. Ye that labor and are heavy laden, come and I will give you rest. Then His loving tender voice obeying, bear His yoke, His burden take. Find the yoke His hand is on you, quiet and easy for His sake. He that labor and are heavy laden, lean upon your dear Lord's breast. Ye that labor and are heavy laden, come and I will give you rest.
Please be seated.